So I would like to start with one of the quotes, questions asked by one of the pioneers in the field, who is Martin Goodswiller. He asked, what would classical chaos, which lurks everywhere in our world, do to quantum mechanics, which is the theory describing the atomic and subatomic worlds? So briefly describing my work further, quantum classical correspondence has been more or less well understood for regular systems in semi-classical regime, but quantum classical correspondence is known to break down for chaotic systems even in a semi-classical regime. So here is the harmonic oscillator, which is a regular system, and here is a hydrogen atom in a very strong magnetic field, which is a chaotic system. On the other hand, recent studies have shown that there is a correspondence between classical phase space properties, classical chaos, and time averaged entanglement entropy even in a deep quantum regime. So here is this is the phase space of a kicktop, which I'll be illustrating further in my talk, and this is the time averaged entanglement entropy plot as a function of initial condition. So you can see that there is a correspondence between the phase space structures of the two plots. So this is even in a deep quantum regime for a few qubit system. So this is the dichotomy that we want to understand, that though quantum classical correspondence is known to break down for chaotic systems in a semi-classical regime, then how does quantum entanglement, which is a purely quantum property, is influenced by classical chaos, which is a classical property in a deep quantum regime? So particularly in the literature, it has been shown that if the classical dynamics is chaotic, then the entanglement in deep quantum regime as well as semi-classical regime is known to be high. But if the classical dynamics is regular, then in semi-classical regime, it has been shown to be low mostly. But the controversy is around in the deep quantum regime. Sometimes regular systems produce high entanglement and sometimes low entanglement. So it has been questioned. It has been a question whether high entanglement can be considered as a signature of chaos or not. So our motivation is to study what happens in the deep quantum regime in regular systems to entanglement. So briefly illustrating few recent works. This is an experimental work on kicktop published in this paper. In a 3-qubit kicktop, which is a very deep quantum regime, they show that classically chaotic dynamics correspond to high entanglement, while regular dynamics correspond to low entanglement. This is the time averaged entanglement entropy plot, and this is the classical phase space which they compare with, according to which they make these conclusions. On the other hand, so there have been various theoretical as well as numerical investigations so far. So for example, this 2017 paper in a 2-qubit kicktop, which is a very deep quantum regime again, they claim that classically chaotic dynamics correspond to medium level entanglement, while regular dynamics correspond to either high or low entanglement. So you can see that there is a controversy in literature where whether entanglement can be said to depend on the global properties of the classical dynamics or not. So first I'll give a brief background to the concepts required for understanding my work. So I'll briefly illustrate what is classical chaos, the breakdown of quantum classical correspondence, then the model that I have been studying, which is quantum kicktop, and then how to study entanglement in isolated spin systems. So this is just the background. So starting with classical chaos, it is characterized by unpredictability due to sensitivity to initial conditions. So I would like to illustrate this with the simulation of a double pendulum, which is known to be a chaotic system. So here there were two initial conditions, which started with very closely spaced, and after evolution, now you can see that you wouldn't have guessed they would have started with very closely spaced initial conditions. So this is the unpredictability due to sensitivity to initial conditions. So I would like to illustrate this with another classic example, which is Lorentz oscillator, whose equation of motion is given by this. And in this video also, there are a few initial conditions which evolve according to these differential equations. And as you can see, in some time, there will be unpredictability due to sensitivity to initial conditions. So recapitulating, classical chaos is a property of nonlinear deterministic dynamical systems, which is characterized by unpredictability due to sensitivity to initial conditions. So further, I would like to illustrate the breakdown of quantum classical correspondence for chaotic systems. So for example, if we take this Ehrenfest correspondence principle, which states that the expectation value of the observables track the classical trajectory for time less than Ehrenfest time. So this Ehrenfest time is known to be of very large magnitude for regular systems, while for chaotic systems, it is known to be very small. So thus, we see that the quantum classical correspondence breaks down within very small time for chaotic systems rather than regular systems. So next, I would like to introduce the model that I have been working on. Just now, feel free to interrupt me in the mid whenever you want to if you have any questions. So the model that I have been studying is Kicktop, whose Hamiltonian is given by this. So here the observables are the angular momentum operators. So this is a time-dependent periodic system. So to understand the classical dynamics of this Hamiltonian, classically angular momentum operators will be vectors. So if we start with a vector p naught, the first term leads to and a rotation of the vector about y-axis by angle p. So p naught goes to p naught prime. So this and the second term leads to a non-linear rotation of the vector by kappa zz angle about z-axis. So p naught prime goes to p1. Thus, the Hamiltonian in one time period comprises of two rotations. One is fixed, one is a linear rotation fixed by an angle p about y-axis, and the other one is a non-linear rotation. Now, the amount of the rotation depends on the z component of the angular momentum vector. So there is a non-linearity here, and that is essential to observe chaos, the square term. So the Floquet time evolution operator for one time period for Kicktop is given by this. So the classic here, the classical equation of motion for one time period is the for the Kicktop is given by this. For p equals pi by 2, and we can see since the magnitude of the angular momentum vector is a constant of motion, therefore we can use polar coordinates. Instead of jx, jy, jz, we can just use theta phi. So here is the classical phase space of the Kicktop. It is a stroboscopic phase space. So how do we plot it? We take any initial angular momentum vector and evolve it with this classical equation of motion. And we plot the value of the angular momentum vector in terms of theta phi after each time period. And then we do this for many different initial conditions. So if we start with a point here, this will remain here. But if we start with a point in the chaotic sea, this will wander around in the sea. So the blue islands are regular islands, and the red regions are the chaotic sea here. This is for kappa equals to 3. As we vary kappa from 0 to a larger value, the Kicktop goes from completely integrable system to a system where it has mostly regular, where the phase space is dominated mostly by the regular regions. And then if we go beyond kappa equals to 4, most of the phase space is chaotic. So in between, there is a mixed phase space where interesting dynamics happen. all this we fix p equals pi by 2 and all are for the simulations and generally vary Kappa. So why do we choose Kicktop? It is a simple enough model to study. It is a finite dimensional system, so there is no truncation error in numerical analysis. So in general, chaos is susceptible to any error because it is characterized by sensitive to initial conditions. So thus having a finite dimensional system where there will be no truncation errors in the numerical analysis is good. And it has also been experimentally realized so far twice. First one was in 2009 in cold cesium atoms, and second one was in 2016 in superconducting qubits. So the results that we have can be experimentally verified as well. So further, I would like to illustrate how do we study entanglement in spin systems. So the kind of systems that we are interested in are the ones whose Hamiltonian commutes with the square of the angular momentum operator, such that the magnitude of the angular momentum vector is a constant, or is a constant of motion. So if we have any pure state with value j, it can be considered to lie in the symmetric subspace of n equals 2j spin half qubits. So for example, if we take j equals to 1, it can be considered to lie in the symmetric subspace of 2 qubits. So suppose half tensor half. So the collective spin of half tensor half is either 1 or 0. So j equals to 1 is the symmetric subspace. So likewise, for any j value, we can consider it as the symmetric subspace of n equals 2j spin half qubits. Further, we can consider any bipartition in this 2j spin half qubit and study any quantum correlations between them. So for example, here 2 qubits versus n minus 2 qubits versus 2 qubits. So to study quantum correlations between them, we can study entanglement by just computing the von Neumann entropy of any of the bipartition. Further, we can also study quantum correlations between individual qubits like this, but we are mostly interested in the entanglement between any bipartition here. So that was mostly the background. Further, I'll explain what we did in our study. So you wanted to study what is the relationship between entanglement and the classical dynamics of a system. And our question was to understand this question mark here, that when the classical dynamics is regular, what happens in a deep quantum regime? When does it produce high entanglement versus low entanglement? So to do that, first of all, we propose a framework to find an upper bound on entanglement in spin systems. So in the framework, we use the Fan's type inequality for von Neumann entropy. So the Fan's type inequality says that if we have two quantum states, rho and sigma, which are finite dimensional, whose dimension is given by small d, then the difference in the von Neumann entropy is upper bounded by this function, where d is the trace distance between rho and sigma, hd is the boundary entropy function, minus x log x minus 1 minus x log 1 minus x. So now in this, if we choose a sigma such that the von Neumann entropy of that sigma is 0, then we get this. Now, to calculate entanglement in any bipartite pure state, psi AB, we basically need to calculate the von Neumann entropy of any of the bipartition, say rho A. So we need, if we choose a sigma lying in the Hilbert space of rho A such that S of sigma is 0, then we get this inequality. Thus, the entanglement in any bipartite pure state psi AB is bounded by this quantity. So this gives an upper bound on generation of entanglement in such states. So our task further is to find sigma such that the von Neumann entropy of rho here is not just an upper bound, but a very good estimate of the entanglement actually. So further, we will try to find such sigma. So sigma will obviously be a pure state, such because the Wernham entropy has to be zero. In general, we can optimize over all pure states to find the optimal states, but we do that without any optimization. We propose two candidates for sigma further, which provides a very good estimate of the entanglement actually. So the candidates for sigma that we choose are reduced states of spin coherent states. So what are spin coherent states? If we take any JJ state in the JM basis and apply a rotation operator in theta phi direction, then we get this spin coherent state, which is a localized state in the theta y direction. One of the representation of this spin coherent state in the 2j qubit representation is given by this, where each of them lie on the Bloch sphere. Now this spin coherent states are minimum uncertainty states, and thus they are considered to be the quantum analog of classical states. So we start with any initial state psi zero. We evolve this with the Hamiltonian H for time 2 in time t, and get this get this state psi t. Now we want to calculate the entanglement in this state psi t in any bipartition of this state. So using the framework that I had just proposed, so the choices of sigma that we make here are reduced states of the spin coherent state centered at, first is the expectation value of the spin of the angular momentum operators with respect to psi t. And the second one is the point on the classical trajectory at time t. So if we start with a spin coherent state localized in any theta phi direction corresponding to J0 vector, then classically we evolve this for time t and then find the spin coherent state at this for this jt, and then calculate the reduced state corresponding to that coherent state, spin coherent state. So these two are the choices. And then we choose the SCS, which has minimum trace distance from psi t to calculate the upper bound on entanglement. So we get this, the Wernham entropy of rho A at any time t, which is the reduced state of this, is bounded by this, where d subscript re is the trace distance between reduced states. One is the reduced state of this, and the other is the reduced state of the chosen SCS. Now, yeah.
So why do you have to use the politics? Have you just you know how to calculate the entanglement specifically, or?
Why do I choose an inequality?
Yeah, yeah. So why do you need to use the inequality, Pareto inequality, as opposed to just looking at the entanglement?
We are doing this to understand the mechanism of generation of entanglement in spin systems. So this framework provides an insight into that. Suppose we know that when this function is going to be very small, then we will know that the entanglement is going to be small. So we want to gain an insight into the mechanism of generation of entanglement, which this framework helps. In general, I mean, yeah, numerically you can calculate this exact value, and our idea is not to provide a computationally efficient method to calculate the entanglement, but to provide an insight into the mechanism of generation of entanglement. If that makes sense, maybe we can discuss it later as well if you want. So further, trace distance between reduced state is bound to be smaller than the trace distance between the evolved state psi t and the chosen spin coherent state, because trace distance is a non-increasing function under quantum operations, and partial trace is a valid quantum operation. So we have proposed a framework to calculate an upper bound on generation of entanglement in spin systems. Now we would like to see how does this framework perform. So we do that in this quantum kicktop model. So whose Hamiltonian is this? So here we study the evolution that I'll illustrate further for a few chosen points, P1, P2, P3. So P1, P3 are in regular region and P2 is in the chaotic sea. We have done the simulations for various initial states, but I'll be showing a few of them. So just reminding, what is the entanglement that I am studying here? So the entanglement between, technically we can study the entanglement in any bipartition of 2j qubits, but since literature has mostly focused on 1 versus rest of the qubits and 2 versus rest of the qubits, the further diagrams will be will focus on entanglement in those bipartitions. So just reminding some of the notations. So S represents the calculation of exact entanglement. S with a subscript UB represents the calculation of entanglement using the framework that I have proposed, the upper bound. S of rho A represents 1-qubit entanglement, and S of rho AA represents 2-qubit entanglement. So here, these two diagrams are for 2-qubit, and these two diagrams are for 1-qubit. This is for J equals to 4, which is a deep quantum regime, and these two are for J equals to 200, which is a semi-classical regime. So you can see that in all these four pictures, the upper bound very closely approximates the exact value of the entanglement calculated from numerics. So particularly for this one, it is much more closer. So further, that was for a point in the regular region. So how does it perform for a point in the chaotic region? So for chaotic region also, we see the same, that the upper bound calculated using the framework very closely approximates the exact value of the entanglement in all these four cases. So this is only for 300 time periods. Now, how does it perform for very large amount of time? So this is for J equals to 100. And here we see that for 10,000 time periods, the deviation is not very large. So still, the upper bound provides a very good estimate of entanglement even for long times. So this, based on these, so overall what we saw is that the framework that we provided to calculate an upper bound on generation of entanglement works very well for chaotic regions as well as regular regions in a deep quantum regime as well as semi-classical regime. So that tells us that the entanglement is related to delocalization. How we infer that? So with a good choice of the spin coherent state for sigma in our framework, we see that the entanglement is very well approximated by this quantity rather than just an upper bound. So now whenever we have very small values of this, we will have a small entanglement, and whenever we have large values of this, we will have large entanglement. Now, small trace distance to the spin coherent state imply a localized evolution in the phase space, and we have seen that small trace distance leads to low entanglement using the framework. Further, large trace distance to spin coherent state leads to delocalized evolution, and we saw that whenever these trace distance is large, then we have high entanglement. Thus, our result is that the entanglement is related to a measure of delocalization. So the main thing is that quantum entanglement is a very purely quantum property, and chaos is a classical property not well defined in quantum yet. So any connection between these two was puzzling to physicists. We have connected these two things using a measure of localization versus delocalization. So chaotic systems in general delocalize in the phase space, and that leads to high entanglement using this framework that we have shown. And if we have a regular system as opposed to chaotic system, then the dynamics of the regular system can be localized, is generally localized in the semi-classical regime, and that's why we have low entanglement, but it can be delocalized in a deep quantum regime where we can get high entanglement. So this result is there in this paper. So whatever I said, I'll illustrate that further here. So our goal was to understand basically this. So we will, to understand this, next we would like to figure out when does the classical regular dynamics, especially in a deep quantum regime, lead to localized evolution versus delocalized evolution. So this is the question that we will be answering in the next part of the talk, which is when does quantum states remain close to classical-like states, which are coherent states or spin-coherent state, upon evolution? So for that, we gave a criteria for localized evolution in this paper. So the criteria for localized evolution near classical stable periodic orbits in periodically driven systems is, so the set of coherent states corresponding to the n points in the period n orbit should form an orthogonal set, and also the set of coherent state corresponding to multiple periodic orbits related by system symmetries should form an orthogonal set. These system symmetries may lead to dynamics such as dynamical tunneling. So theoretically, if we take to a spin coherent state, there exists only one spin coherent state which is exactly orthogonal to the that spin coherent state which lies at the diametrically opposite point of the sphere. But the overlap between any two spin coherent state is given by this, where it is exponentiated by the J value. So we can make this overlap very small given any two spin coherent state by increasing the value of J. Here chi is the angle between these two direction vectors, theta phi and theta naught phi naught. So thus, by increasing the J value, we can form an approximately orthogonal set as we increase the J value. So we illustrate this conjecture again in the kick top. So the conjecture is for near stable periodic orbits in periodically driven systems, and kick top is a periodically driven system. It comprises of various types of periodic orbits, so just to illustrate it here. So for example, the center of this island and this island are fixed points. The center of these two islands form a period 2 orbit, and there are period 4 and period 8 orbits and so on. So we study the quantum dynamics at a classical period 2 orbit. So when we fix J equals to 10, this is the Huysmans, this is using the Huysmans phase space representation. So when we fix J equals to 10, and we start with a spin coherent state localized at this point of the period 2 orbit, upon evolution, we see that the dynamics gets mixed. But for J equals to 40, here we observe that upon evolution, it mimics the classical trajectory. So classically, a point at the center of this island will go to this, and in one time period, after two time periods, it will come back, and it will continue to exhibit that motion. So here you can see that for J equals to 40, the quantum dynamics mimic that classical dynamics. So the interesting thing is that for J equals to 10, the overlap between the spin coherent states at these two points of the period 2 orbit is of the order 10 to the power minus 4, while for J equals to 40, it is really small, of the order of 10 to the power minus 14, which leads to localized evolution. So I have just illustrated this conjecture for a period 2 orbit here in the paper. I have also illustrated it for period a fixed point and period 4 orbits. So we term this criteria as quantification of Bohr's correspondence principle, because in general, Bohr's correspondence principle states that In the limit of large quantum numbers, you will get quantum classical correspondence. But how large is large enough? Can we have a quantification of that magnitude? So using the criteria, we can have a quantifier for the quantum numbers at which we will have a correspondence with classical dynamics in periodically driven systems.
Sorry, can you say what the criteria was again?
This is the criteria.
Sorry, where does it have to tell you what the number should be, how big it should be?
So the number, like for spin systems, we can calculate the number from here. So as I said, we can only have approximate orthogonal sets, not exact orthogonal set.
But I mean, 10 to the minus 4 also sounds small. So
the thing is, the lesser the overlap between the endpoints will be, the time to for which you can get the correspondence will be larger. So
do you have something that says how that scales?
So no, in that paper we hadn't done the quantification of time yet. But in general, calculation of unfest time for regular systems, as far as I have searched the literature, is a very complicated thing, and people have not pursued it. And even having a one criteria which says that, okay, you will when you will get for long enough times, I think is good enough. But yeah, that I understand that point, and that may be work for some further research, and how to quantify the time with the quantum number, for how much time will we get the quantum classical correspondence. So next, we have seen the criteria using which we can determine when we will get localized evolution around stable periodic orbits in periodically driven systems. And whenever we have localized evolution, we get small entanglement that was using the framework. So here I illustrate how localized versus delocalized evolution affect entanglement at different period n orbits. So there is a fixed point, period 2 orbit, and period 4 orbit. So in all these plots, y-axis is the kappa parameter, and x-axis is the j value. So first of all, I would like to illustrate what fixed point and period 2 orbit I'm talking about. So reminding, this is the kicktop Hamiltonian, where kappa is a parameter. So the fixed point that I talked about there is, if the north and south poles of the y-axis on the sphere, so these two points, so for kappa less than 2, they are stable. They bifurcate at kappa equals to 2 to period 2 orbit, and this one bifurcates to 2 fixed point. So beyond kappa equals to 2, this point, these two points become unstable, which were stable here, and they give rise to a period 2 orbit here, whose formula we found out to be this. So you can see the formula is dependent on kappa itself. I mean, the exact location of, as you vary kappa, the location of the period 2 orbit will change here. So for the fixed point, as we saw, that for kappa equals to, at kappa equals to 2, it bifurcates and becomes unstable. So for kappa less than 2, the fixed point is stable. And here we see the survival probability to be very high when the fixed point is stable classically. So survival probability is basically if we start, so suppose, so is there, suppose we have a period n orbit, then we calculate the quantity psi zero, and time average it. So this plot is basically summed over. So this is for, sorry. And there will be. No. If we have a period. Yeah, so if we have a fixed point, suppose, for the fixed point, this plot is time averaged entanglement and to some value, suppose M. So we can, the survival probability is basically this for fixed point. And if we take a periodic orbit of period M, then here U to the power M. So this is the survival probability function that we use. So this, the survival probability basically tells us that whether it mimics the classical trajectory or not for these periodic orbits. So after it becomes unstable at kappa equals to 2, we see that there is delocalized evolution, and here there is delocalized evolution. And if we compare it with the entanglement plots, we see that whenever there is localized evolution, we have low entanglement, and when we have delocalized evolution, we have large entanglement. And for this, the criteria is satisfied for all j values for the fixed point. So we see the signature right from small j values. But for period 2 orbit, we see localized evolution only around this point. So the dashed curve here basically is the value for the j value calculated corresponding to kappa. As I had shown, the value of the period 2, the exact position of the period 2 orbit depends on kappa parameter here. So we corresponding to the kappa, we calculate the value j, and below that we see that when the criteria is not satisfied, we have delocalized evolution. And when the criteria is satisfied, we have mostly localized evolution and thus low entanglement here. And this period 2 orbit bifurcates at kappa equals to root 2 pi, beyond which we have delocalized evolution and thus we have high entanglement. The same follows for period 4 orbit there. So the moral of the story is that classical chaos implies instability, basically. And instability leads to delocalized quantum evolution, and which leads to high entanglement, which we have explained using our framework. Further, the regular dynamics corresponds to, produces localized evolution when the criteria is satisfied, and localized evolution produces low entanglement. In general, regular dynamics can produce delocalized evolution as well, and thus high entanglement in a deep quantum regime. So, yeah.
So, in the middle pictures, below the dashed line, you seem to have below the dashed line, you seem to have a mismatch between the survival probability and the entropy.
So you can see that this is light yellow, which corresponds to somewhere around this, and this is also light yellow.
Okay.
I mean, it is not exact mismatch. This is, I think the contrast here clearly demarcates it, but the contrast here is not so much, but mostly here you can see it is mostly completely white, so where there is dark red. But probably I should plot this line in this plot as well, and then it will make things clear.
There to be a problem there.
I don't think so. There should be too much of a problem. But again, as I had said, that the criteria is a bit loose, in the sense it depends on what j value you are choosing, the overlap should be as less as possible. So you can fix some epsilon value there for the overlap to be small. So the j value will vary depending on that. And this is time averaged over 50 time periods. You can time average it over more time period or less time period. So there can be a bit of dependence over that there.
Okay.
But generally, we see a match. And does that answer your question? No?
Well, go ahead.
OK, we can talk after the talk. So summarizing, first of all, we gave a framework to calculate an upper bound on entanglement generation and spin systems. Then we gave a criteria for quantum classical correspondence in periodically driven systems. And using these two results, we can conclude that the high entanglement is only a signature of chaos in a semi-classical regime in periodically driven spin systems. So this was for periodically driven systems. So, and this was for a spin system. So this is basically an intersection of those two types of systems in which we conclude this result. So we started with trying to understand this dichotomy that how does, though quantum classical correspondence breaks down in chaotic systems, even in a semi-classical regime, how does classical chaos affect a purely quantum property, which is entanglement, even in a deep quantum regime? So we were able to understand this through the framework. So this was the main part of the talk. I'll illustrate briefly the other projects that I have done. So maybe whatever questions are there till this part of the talk, I can take it now. Yeah?
So in the picture of entanglement, which is similar to the one above, yeah, so how does that, so is this entanglement entropy of the model that you were talking about before? Or
yeah, so this is for that. This is for that. So this is the classical phase space of the kick top for a particular value of kappa equals to 3. This is the time-averaged entanglement entropy plot as a function of initial condition. So what we do here is, suppose we take an initial condition here, and then we evolve that initial condition, the spin current state corresponding to that. We evolve that using the kick-top Hamiltonian. We calculate the entanglement at each point of time, and then time-average it, and then do that for initial conditions in the whole phase space. And then you can see that there is a correspondence in the structures of these two phase space, these two diagrams, and that was puzzling to physicists. So this is for j equals to 20, actually. So as you vary j, the correspondence seems to, that was the question that physicists were trying to understand, that as you vary j value, here you can see that regular regions correspond to low entanglement. Chaotic regions correspond to high entanglement. So this is for j equals to 20. If you do it for j equals to 1 or 2, you won't see the direct correspondence. Regular regions can also produce high entanglement. So some papers were claiming that, OK, high entanglement is not a signature of chaos in the sense that entanglement does not depend on the global properties of the system. It depends on the specific properties of the system rather than global properties, regular versus chaotic. So that was the controversy in general. So using our framework, we were able to understand that. So we brought in the theory of localization versus delocalization, when quantum evolution will be localized versus delocalized, and how does it affect the generation of entanglement. So in deep quantum regime, that's why we say that in deep quantum regime, we do not have an exact correspondence that regular dynamics will correspond to low entanglement, but in semi-classical regime there is. And why in deep quantum regime that this happens, that sometimes it produces low entanglement, sometimes it produces high entanglement? Our framework answers that question. So without calculating the entanglement, just by looking at the evolution of the system in the phase space, you can predict what would an entanglement look like. Yeah.
So how many periods do you need to average over to get this kind of plot?
So like this
J equals 20, or is it one period or is it like
this is for, as far as I remember, 50 time periods.
Sorry?
This is for 50 time periods.
Okay. And one thing, the upper right picture, what does that depict again?
This is the classical phase space of the kick top. So
are there points there?
So the thing is, yeah, this is the Hamiltonian. So, and I had shown in the beginning slide, there was classical equation of motion that you can, Hamilton's equation of motion that you can write. So you take any initial angular momentum vector and evolve it using the classical equation of motion of this Hamiltonian. And since this is stroboscopic, time periodic, you do that at every integer number of time periods. So now you plot the subsequent evolved states, subsequent evolved vectors here. And since j is constant, so we can use theta phi representation. So if you take a point here and evolve using the classical equation of motion, it will go around in the phase space.
Okay, but that's not depicted in the picture, right? Only the points where it will land.
Yeah, so if we do that for all points in the phase space, it will be a completely black phase space, right? So because all points will be covered. So we do it only for selective points to understand the structure. So if we start with a point here, it will remain here. If we start with a point here, it is a period 2 orbit, it will go back and forth. The points nearby will perform this kind of evolution. So it's generally, it's done in this way to understand how the points will evolve in the phase space. So is that clear?
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether there is some way to relate, say, the density of the points to something useful, but it doesn't seem like that's necessarily the case. Because on the plot of the entropy, you have some kind of gradient between low entropy and high entropy.
Okay.
On this plot, you don't really
Yeah, so technically those two plots are of different things.
Yeah.
So in classical phase space, we don't have something. I mean, probably I'll have to think if we can come up with some quantity which relates to some kind of density rather than the exact points, and then we will have direct value. Yeah, we can discuss that later a bit more if you want. Any more questions on this part? Okay, so going further. So apart from studying entanglement in kicktop, we also studied non-locality in kicktop, which gave rise to two results. So first one is this one, this paper, in which we gave a theorem that given a two-qubit monogamous Bell inequality, any two-qubit state that violates this inequality cannot possess a symmetric extension. Thus, it gives a sufficient condition for non-existence of symmetric extension for two-qubit state. And since we need monogamous Bell inequality for this theorem to work, we conjectured the Bell CGLMP inequality for qutrits to be monogamous. So this is the second result on kicktop, which I'm still writing. So in this, there are fixed points and periodic orbits between which we have seen that dynamical tunneling can take place in kicktop. So if we start with certain state and evolve till certain amount of time, which we have calculated, we can get these kind of states, which are GSD-like state. So this state is, we can produce states like, suppose for 4 qubits. So we can produce states like this for 6 qubits, 8 qubits, and also in different bases. Now these GSD-like states are, these are in the eigenstates of Z, as sigma Z basis, and this is in eigenbasis of sigma Y. Sorry. So this one we can do this for even number of qubits, for any number of qubits. So since GSD-like states are maximally entangled and violate the multi-qubit cyclicity is inequality maximally, thus producing maximal non-local correlations. They may be of various applications. We just need to take any separable state, spin-coherent state, which are a separable state, doesn't contain any correlation, and evolve it using the kicked-up Hamiltonian for a certain amount of time. So this is in manuscript in preparation. And there was another project that we did. So in general, quantum dynamics are known to be sensitive to perturbations in external control parameter. The sensitivity can be measured via fidelity decay. So for example, here what we measure is if we have an initial state psi zero and some Hamiltonian which has some parameter, suppose kicked-up Hamiltonian has a control parameter kappa. So we evolve it with two different the same Hamiltonian but with two different parameter values which are spaced by epsilon, which is very small quantity, and then calculate the overlap between these two. So this is the quantity that is fidelity here. So this decays pretty soon. So we found a method to lower bound this fidelity decay by coupling the system to a quantized environment. And this gave us a lower bound on the fidelity decay against perturbations in effective control parameter. So there is one more project that I did, which is our causal inequality is monogamous, which is in collaboration with Fabio Costa, a postdoc in Queensland, apart from my supervisors, Shoini Ghosh and Rob Mann. So we first defined symmetric extensions of process matrices there, and then we showed the causal inequalities, guess your neighbor's input and lazy guess your neighbor's input, to be weakly monogamous. So I would like to thank all the people that I have collaborated with so far. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
So, yeah. You mentioned some experimental realizations of the kicked-up.
Yeah.
So, in those, do you know if they would be able to do, say, local operations in the kind of partition that you are defining?
So they actually use collective, both the experiments have used collective spin system rather than actual 2J qubit system. So currently, whatever experimental realizations are there, if you want to target individual qubits, it won't be possible in those experiments, but one can definitely come up with something, a 2J qubit system, and evolve it with this Hamiltonian, where it might be possible. So Hamiltonian theoretical is pretty useful if we can realize it using our 2J qubit system, I suppose. But then we can produce various type of states which might be useful in applications to quantum computing.
Do you know what value of gate is used in experiments?
So in the 2009 experiment using cold cesium atom, it is J equals to 3. And for 2016 superconducting qubits, it is J equals 3 by 2. So 3 qubit.
Thank you.